So NewZest is one of my favorite protein powders across the board. And I've been speaking about it for a few weeks now, and I hope some of you have gone out and tried it. And if you have, let me know, DM me, and I'd like to know how you like it, what's your favorite flavor, how you mix it. And you know, I'm such a fan of NewZest because it's so important to know what you're putting into your body. And it's why I'm passionate about brands who are always showing their transparency and sharing their independent testing, which is what NewZest did. So NewZest, N-U-Z-E-S-T, arguably one of the finest top quality protein powders on the planet. It's made from premium European gold peas grown in northern France. They're processed in Belgium. They use water-based technology. And the end product, which you get, is the clean, lean protein. And clean, lean protein is a benchmark for clean label free-form supplements, and which for me is very, very important. NewZest also is highly digestible. No common allergens. They're regularly testing for soy, dairy, heavy metals, pesticides, and herbicides. As I mentioned, you'll see that. And they are transparent if you reach out to them. So no matter if you suffer from poor gut health, you have diabetes, celiac disease, or you're just overall health conscious and want a clean protein powder, NewZest is the one that I choose. So say, for example, this morning, I had the strawberry NewZest. I put in blueberries, frozen blueberries, some almond milk, a little bit of salt, because I do like the contrast between salt, and some sweet. I put some monk fruit. Mixed it up, and that's what I had on the go on the way here to the studio. So, Heal Thyself listeners who are purchasing NewZest via the link in the description will receive 20% off of their first purchase. This is excluding sale items, bundles, subscription, and gift cards. But the link is nuzest.us/healthyself. Biooptimizers Magnesium has been part of my sleep regimen for about 5 months. It's one of my favorite supplements that I'm using to facilitate better sleep. Sleep is an essential top pillar for overall health. It's a foundation. So many of us instead sacrifice sleep as the number one things so we can have more time to do work, spend time socially. But sleep is so essential. And a lot of us are magnesium deficient. And we know that magnesium helps facilitate restful sleep. It relaxes the nervous system, relaxes the body. So for me, I tend to be a night owl. My mind is awake and I start getting creative late at night, and it can become a problem because next thing I know, it's 12, 1 in the morning and it's affecting my sleep. So what I do is I take my magnesium earlier on, right around 9, 10 o'clock, and I relax my body, do my sleep hygiene. And what I'm doing is facilitating a better overall sleep. And I see that with my sleep scores in the morning. It's super important because the body is healing itself during sleep, especially when you sleep. That's when you need the most melatonin in the body that's healing, rejuvenating, and protecting you. And if you're not getting enough sleep, you're increasing your risk of overall disease. If you're not waking up rejuvenated and renewed for the day, you ain't getting enough sleep. And we know that over 70% of us out there are magnesium deficient. So Biooptimizers, the product that I use, is Magnesium Breakthrough. It's a full spectrum magnesium. It has 7 unique forms of magnesium, which ultimately is giving you that, like I said, calm, overall relaxing feeling, which is going to enhance your sleep. So I take 2 capsules a few hours before bed, and I'm finding on my sleep scores that it's much, much better. So regardless, even if you're not sleeping well, the chances are is that we're not getting enough magnesium as it is. So Magnesium Breakthrough is a staple. So go to www.magbreakthrough.com. That's magbreakthrough.com/Dr. G. You're going to get 10% off of any order when you use the code DRG10. All right, everyone, welcome to today's episode of Heal Thyself. As always, thank you for taking the time out of your day to show up for not only the show, but for yourself. This is so important, and every single show that we put out there is to empower you all. So you spread this information to your loved ones so they do better with their life. Look, that's the main goal. It's always been the goal. Go to episode 1 and you're going to hear the same thing. So today's show is a very special one. We have a really, really cool, forward-thinking, holistically minded, functional doctor, Dr. Eric Balkovich. And what we're going to talk about is not only thyroid physiology, but also go deeper into why people have thyroid dysfunction. But not only that, we're going to talk about overall health. What are some of the pillars and things that we're overlooking that we can do for free and cheap to ensure better overall health? We're going to dive into what are the root causes of why there is thyroid dysfunction and go into one of the main factors of why our body creates a stress response. Now, before we get into this guest segment, I want to talk a little bit about breathing. I found myself recently sitting with Marin Azoff, and she's a renowned vocal coach. And one of the first things she teaches her clients, and she'll be on this show soon, is how to breathe. And what I realize is that not only me, but the people in my group were not breathing right or correct most of their life. At some point, we learn to breathe with our chest and with our clavicle, and that's giving our body a stress response, telling us that the world isn't safe, right? There's a threat, our very survival is not insured, and our body is responding accordingly, particularly our cells. So what Dr. Eric and I are going to talk about is how breathing correctly can make a massive change to our cell physiology, to thyroid health, and our overall health. And think about it. Before we jump into it, I just want to bring awareness to all of you. Where are you breathing from? Are you breathing through your chest? From your chest? Put your hand on your chest. Put your hand on your belly. See if you take a deep breath, where are you breathing from? If the hand on your chest is really expanding and the one on your stomach is contracting, and you may want to bring attention and awareness that breathing through your belly is going to create diaphragmatic breathing. And that's the breathing we want to do. We want our diaphragm to push all the way down and expand our lungs and get proper oxygenation. So if you're in your car, or you're standing in your kitchen, sitting on the couch, hanging out outside, I want you all to check, where are you breathing from? Because this is the awareness I want you to bring for this guest segment, because we're gonna go deep into breathing. We're gonna go deep into what happens when we breathe incorrectly. And check this out, changing your breathing can make a massive change to your overall health. Tell me what doctor told you that. This is what we need to understand holistically. There are things that we've overlooked fundamentally, which lend to our overall health. And that's what I want to bring to the table. So without further ado, let's get to this convo with Dr. Eric Balkovich. All right, everyone, today's special guest, Eric Balkovich. He is a functional practitioner, and he is someone who I look to for all things thyroid, amongst many other things, and we're going to talk about other things, but this guy is a thyroid guy, and I can't wait to get into this conversation because it's one of the most complex organs. And the way that we talk about the thyroid is ways that conventionally you don't hear or you learn in school, right? There's right. The research you're coming across and really we're talking about is like way deeper mm-hmm. and way more holistic. So welcome to the show, Doc.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Viewers, listeners, where are you coming from, first of all?
I'm coming from southeastern Pennsylvania.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And more rural, right?
Yeah, we're a little bit more rural than this area. Yeah. We don't have houses quite stacked on top of ourselves. But I'm out in the countryside, southeastern corner of Pennsylvania, right almost where New Jersey and Delaware, Maryland right. all kind of meet. Nice rural area. I think you spent some time out mm-hmm. in the Philadelphia area, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So out in the suburbs area. So it's a little bit different, but beautiful here. Yeah. But also really nice.
Yeah,
there
yeah.
Too. Also really,
yeah. So what I mentioned is that you every time, look, I follow your Instagram and mm-hmm. you're an excellent teacher, right?
This is,
and I could see that in you. You know, you have whiteboards and you're, you know, drawing mechanisms sometimes or like really important words that we need to remember. And this is for me why I bring people on the show, because you synthesize information that's pretty complex and you could tell it to people, right? So I know that we talk a lot about thyroid, as I mentioned. What drew your interest into that route? You know, I know you're a chiropractor. Why didn't you do full physical medicine, head to toe and adjustments? Like, why did you go right into the thyroid?
Well, you know what? I never had any intention of getting into thyroid physiology. Okay. Originally, my background was, I was a medical technologist. So I was going to go to med school, wind up in a car accident, take some time off school. Long story short, chiropractor helps me out, wind up going off to chiropractic school. And I came out of chiropractic school and I was doing like anybody else, doing chiropractic adjustments. And then I got a call from my brother who said, hey, my wife has been diagnosed with hypothyroidism mm. and anemia and fibroids and like, okay. Like, what am I supposed to do?
Yeah.
And he's like, well, you're going to figure out what to do for her, right?
Right.
So that started me down this journey of looking into what was going on. And I found functional medicine, which was great because they've kind of brought my background of medical technology back. I did all, that was all blood work and labs mm-hmm. in a hospital setting before I went off to chiropractic school. But I found functional medicine, it was different than what I learned in school.
Right.
Found Atish Karazian, and he was talking about thyroid physiology, so it was perfect. Mm-hmm. And so I started learning and getting involved with thyroid physiology in an effort really to help my sister-in-law. And as I'm learning that stuff and then talking to my patients, it's like a lot of people have thyroid issues.
A lot. And some are not even diagnosed yet.
Right. Well, yeah. Once you know
what you know,
right?
Right. But it's sort of like smoldering for quite a while where, you know, you're having dysfunction throughout the whole body.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. But, you know, you just don't realize that many people have an issue.
Right.
People aren't not always walking around like, I have a thyroid issue. And if you don't know anything about thyroid physiology, you wouldn't know that that's what a person's struggling with. Right. Now, like, I'm the weirdo sitting at the, you know, at the airport hotel going, thyroid problem,
yeah,
thyroid
yeah, you
problem,
can tell,
thyroid
you can
problem,
tell.
Right? Because you just know who they are.
Yeah.
But that started the journey. And then as I started doing more and more understanding of it in my patients, I started seeing, started having more challenges and problems. It led me to seek kind of different answers, deeper answers, mm-hmm. because I just, even what I was learning in functional medicine, I wasn't kind of okay with just the answer. Right. I was like, but why is this happening?
Right.
I don't, why is the body? So we're saying that the body just forgets who it is and it just automatically just loses control of the immune system and starts destroying the gland. To me, that didn't make a ton of sense. And so then that's really led me on this last 10 or 15 year journey to try and really understand what's going on in the body better. And, at this point in time, you know, as we've talked, I don't look at thyroid physiology as this thing that the immune system has just totally lost control and is totally misguided, attacking and destroying a gland. I look at it as part of a adaptive part of the physiology to protect us from some stress or threat.
Yeah. And I'm such a believer in adaptive responses in the body. And to understand to say the body's imperfect in the way it approaches something that's happening, for me is just short-sighted, right? Mm-hmm. Because we have to think, and I've always submitted to this, the body's way smarter than me,
right?
Or any of my teachers I've ever had, or any scientist out there. So to understand, okay, well, let's look at it another way, which is the way you see as an adaptive response. But what's it responding to?
Well, it's always responding to some form of stress stimuli, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's within the confines of what's easily adaptable to. And sometimes that stress stimuli is excessive. And that triggers a process that's in the literature, has been talked about for an extended period of time, which is what we call a cell stress or cell danger response. Right. So when a cell perceives danger, I mean, it's much like people. If you walk down the street, like always kind of just in case you have your kind of adaptive guard up, just in case. But when you sense that you're in real danger, everything changes, mm-hmm. right? And the cells are kind of like people. I mean, they're kind of doing their normal thing, making hormones, making enzymes, right? Yeah. Making energy. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait a second here. Something's not right. Slow down normal physiology and let's change and get into protective mode. Mm-hmm. And that's what we call that cell danger response. And I think, you know, when we start thinking about how many people are struggling with chronic health issues and how many people are probably struggling with thyroid issues, whether diagnosed or undiagnosed, it's not hard to realize that we're living in this kind of chronic stress overload that our body's constantly in adaptive mode mm-hmm. and maybe in a constant cell danger response for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. And when you say stress, a lot of us think, okay, you know, mental stress, but there are physical stressors. We talk a lot about things like inflammation or infection. It's basically the whole gamut of physical but mental, emotional stressors that could be pushing this adaptive response, right?
Yeah, I think it's all of those things. It's physical stress, it's chemical stress, it's emotional stress, it's microbial stress, it's respiratory stress, it's sleep stress, it's habitual stress, right? It's all of those things. It's environmental stress. And everybody says, well, I'm not stressed out. Well, we're all under a load of stress. And the issue is, I think for a lot of people, they are only thinking about emotion, right? Mm-hmm. That's it. I don't have any problems. You know, I'm not stressed. But they're not aware of, you know, some of the things you talk about all the time on your podcast when you're doing things. Look at what you're drinking, look at what you're eating, what, you know, environment you're in. All of those things contribute to the load. Yeah. And it's the load that typically gets us. It's not usually the thing. Most people are aware of the one trauma that triggers the danger response, but that's usually not the issue. And I think for a lot of those people, even the thing they think is the acute danger response isn't the thing. You know, it's the load. I always talk about to my patients, like, think about if you had two cinder blocks and a plank, a board going across, and think about life stress, like just adding 5 pound weights to that board, right? You know, stress isn't bad, right? It actually helps us get stronger. There's what we call hormetic effect to stress. But if I just keep stacking 5 pound weights on there and the capacity of that board is like 100 pounds, right? When I put the last 5 pounds on and get to 105 pounds and it breaks, like, which 5 pounds was it?
Exactly.
And some people are like, it's the last one, obviously. Okay, well, just let's take that one off.
Right.
Is the board still broken? Yeah. So that was the piece, right? And but they don't realize that all the things they've been dealing with, emotional stress, past trauma, the environmental stress, all things that they could probably adapt to on their own are just building up. And then it just takes one little more thing. It's gluten, right?
Yeah, right.
And then, and that must be the thing. When it's reality, it's all those things.
Yeah. And that's the holistic approach to health, right? Because if you think about it, we can say the last thing, go to the doctor and actually maybe get, not for gluten, but get medication for that last thing that happened. Whereas we don't look at, okay, well, let's see the culmination. I think the culmination approach of like how that plank has been stressed or how that bucket's been filling up, right? That is like the approach that you really start healing people, right? Because then you start pulling out, oh, let me get up before the board, it's about to break, let me get a, get out a 5 pound weight, let me get another 5 pound weight. And to address those things, that's the power, that's the power of making change. So for you, you have people coming into the clinic, or would you say most people who show up are with all of those stressors, not the, the ones we talked about? Are there, is their load really heavy in today's day and age?
I would say almost all of them. I mean, most of my patients aren't relatively healthy people. I mean, a bunch of them have been through lots of different options. They don't look too bad. I think those are the people that sometimes are the most frustrated, is the person who actually looks okay, right? From the surface, because they get, I have really sick people I take care of. You're not too bad, right? And so they're frustrated because they don't feel well. But I think people just aren't aware of the load that they're dealing with because we're surrounded by it. You know, it's like, I don't know, if you eat at a fast food restaurant every day, I mean, you'd be like, I don't know, this is what I feel like every day. I don't think this is bad, right?
Yeah, we adapt.
Right. So you do adapt. I mean, the body's pretty cool. I mean, it can, it sometimes, you know, you see this, it's funny. The person who eats unhealthy every day, right? They seem to tolerate that unhealthy food real easy. I eat it and I'm like, oh, my belly doesn't feel good. You know, am I weaker? Right? Am I less healthy than them because I can't tolerate the junk food? I don't know. I just don't think that many people are aware of the load. But I do think, like in my client base, a lot of those people that come in are aware that something's wrong, and they're looking for the shiny, sexy thing to be the thing that somebody's talked about on a blog or podcast. And I think sometimes they're often disappointed when I'm not focused on the shine, same shiny thing. Initially, I'm like, look, it could be mold. It could be Lyme. Or it could be your diet, your lifestyle, your lack of sleep, your poor breathing, your emotional things, your relationships. It could be all those.
Yeah.
So why don't we just make sure we deal with the foundational things and deal with those first, and then we'll worry about crisis management. And it's not to say that some of those people don't have some of those shiny objects, but I think sometimes they get caught on those things, and 100%. Making them more aware of the simple things sometimes is helpful.
Yeah, 100%. When I was practicing, I was dealing with a lot of mold patients, and the first goal is the foundation. Like, can we build your resiliency? Because you're in that mold. Can we build your resiliency and absolutely address the mold? But I mean, like, you're not sleeping, you're not eating well, you know, you have a really stressful relationship with your boss at work or your spouse. That's those are the things that are adding to that bucket big time. Mm-hmm. The mold is in there, but it's adding to it. So it's funny because they're not sexy, right?
No, they're not.
Those topics that people are like, what do you mean? I have to change all these things in my life?
I don't like doing breathing exercises. Why do I have to do those?
Right, right. So what is the importance of, because we spoke before and you did mention breathing. What is the importance of breathing to you just overall in health? Because it's something we overlook big time. And it's funny because I've been doing a lot of breathwork classes lately. So I've been learning a lot more about, whoa, I haven't been breathing normally. But what's the importance on the physiology with proper breathing?
Well, when you don't breathe well, I mean, one of the key things is people have to kind of go back to maybe seventh or eighth grade science class, and there was something called the Bohr effect. And so when you breathe in oxygen, your red blood cells that we have can pick up that oxygen and carry it around to the body and then give it off to the cells. But the only reason that red blood cells are going to give off that oxygen is if there's more carbon dioxide, right? A waste product from the cells. And so when there's lots of carbon dioxide, the red blood cell says, hey, I'll give up the oxygen and I'll take some of that carbon dioxide and get rid of it. And what happens to a lot of people is that they breathe more through their mouth, less through their nose, more rapidly, more shallow, and that causes more carbon dioxide to be blown off. Mm-hmm. And when you blow off too much carbon dioxide, then the red blood cells, even if they're saturated with oxygen, won't give up the oxygen to any of the tissues. So now I have a tissue that's starved of oxygen. And at the cell level, that's a big deal, right? Because that triggers danger responses like, oh my gosh, we don't have enough oxygen. We're going to die, right? And that triggers a danger response. And the cells are going to be in more of a, okay, slow everything down because we don't have enough oxygen. And one of the big things everybody wants is more energy. Well, energy is oxygen really dependent to be right, real efficient right. at it, right? So I don't have oxygen. I don't need to make excess energy. I'm going to kind of slow down my metabolism. I'm going to slow down the production of proteins and enzymes and kind of conserve what oxygen I do have. And I'm going to use some of that energy to find what the threat is. So somebody who breathes poorly day in, day out, they're putting themselves in a chronic danger response. They're putting themselves into a chronic inflammatory response. They're slowing down their thyroid physiology. They're definitely, if they're breathing poorly during the day, they're definitely going to breathe poorly at night. Mm-hmm. And so, hey, if I'm not getting oxygen to my brain at night, what am I going to do?
Right.
I'm going to kick in my fight or flight system and say, hey, let's get some epinephrine going. Let's get this body awake, more alert. Let's get some oxygen in the system. And again, that's a person who's going to struggle with inflammatory immune issues, disrupted sleep, all kinds of challenges and problems. But it's not sexy to work on.
It's not. But it's shocking to me because, like I said, I've been doing a lot of breathwork classes with this particular person. And in the group, everyone breathes. They're off with their breathing. Mm-hmm. Like, we are all breathing from, like, our chest and, you know, like, upper clavicle area. And we're just like... You know, and it's telling our body that we're in fight or flight, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, I always say that, like, if you see something and you gasp, that's sort of how we breathe. We're gasp breathing instead of going from diaphragmatic breathing. And to see the struggle that people have when they're like, okay, now, like, push out your belly and breathe from there. Like, oh, I can't really even do it. My muscles are so tight. And that's years of poor breathing.
Yep.
And it's wild because a lot of us don't even want to address that. But it's free.
It is.
And it's easy.
And I get it. It's not fun. It takes work. But it is one of those things that when somebody's looking for the best, like, how do I improve my sleep? What can you give me to help me improve my sleep? How about you start working on breathing better? Mm-hmm. How about you work on some breathing exercises during the day that'll help you at night? You got to work on your nasal breathing. You try some mouth tape. I'm not putting anything on my mouth.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Why would I do that? I'm going to suffocate. No, technically, you're not. Mm-hmm. That your mouth is for more eating. And throwing up. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily for doing all your breathing. But people, right. I get it. Everybody wants the easier way to do things. Mm-hmm. And working on breathing is work. It's not fun.
Yeah,
I didn't like doing it one night. It's
called breath work.
Yeah.
For a reason.
Work.
Right.
Breath work.
Right. But once you get the hang of it, I mean, it becomes more and more easy because you're able to understand that, oh, this is more natural. You look at baby breathing. Right, look at a kid breathing. Their stomach is like coming out and in, and they're watching TV and they're breathing. You could tell where they're breathing from. The body knows, and that's proper respiration, like you said, to oxygenate the tissues. And the danger response makes sense. There's just, I think if people understand that there's stimuli all the time, every single day, second of the day, right? When we're walking, when we're eating, when we're watching, when we're breathing, and all our cells are responding in accordance to that. So getting back to your true nature of breathing is so important. So when you, like, let's say I came to your clinic and I go, and you go, Christian, you're not even breathing. Like, look at, I can tell, look how you're breathing. And you're not oxygenating your tissues. What are some of the things or practices you say? It, like 5 minutes a day, 20 minutes a day, 2 minutes a day, how do we check in?
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing for me is to kind of cover two things. One is to get the person to assess themselves. So we'll do a controlled hold breath time test. Essentially what they're doing is blowing all the air out, clamp their nose, keep their mouth shut, and sit until they have the first sense of anxiousness or panic. It's good to have somebody watch them, see if they're swallowing, their muscles twitch, and get them aware of what maybe more normal is and where they are, right? So I like patients to be above 40 seconds, right? At least above 20 seconds. But most people are like, I don't have a breathing problem. And then, okay, do the controlled breath hold time test. What'd you get? I was like 12 or I was like eight. I'm like, yeah, you're not breathing appropriately. And then the other thing is once they get it, now they understand it's an issue. Most people think, okay, if I do a couple of exercises for the day, then I should be good. And you have to help them understand that no, this is work. It's going to take practice. And then get them over the point. I think the thought process is that normal respiration is like, I don't know, 16 breaths per minute, isn't that kind of what we were taught?
Yeah.
Versus less than 10 is now thought to be the healthiest people. And when you look at people who are super fit, I mean, I saw some literature and science less than 6. Whoa. I think there's I don't remember some Hindu proverb or something like the man who breathes the least is the most healthy or something like that. Mm-hmm. And you know, most people would think more breath,
right?
More oxygen, more air. When in reality, it's probably the opposite. And for the people who are listening, they're thinking, well, that doesn't make sense, but it does. The less you breathe, the more carbon dioxide you produce, the better your oxygen is going to get to those tissues. Mm-hmm. So it is a balance. But the less breathing you're doing, especially if you're nasal breathing, the more beneficial it's going to be.
Yeah. Super easy test. People who just listen can do it and check themselves. So what was the number that you look for?
I like people to be over 40.
Right.
It's and not often.
It's not often.
No.
But more people are around what?
I'd say like when I have somebody under 10, I know I've got somebody who's really, really struggling.
Okay.
But I would say the average person that I see with chronic health issues is under 20.
Okay. Yeah. So we can do that test and check it out and see where you stand.
Yeah, super simple.
Yeah. And if you do fall in that range where you're like, I'm a little concerned, then that shows us, all right, let's practice our breathing. Maybe we can go to a breathwork class and relearn how to breathe. Isn't that crazy to even say?
Yeah, and there are people that just, this is their career, is to teach people how to breathe again, right? Yeah. And it sounds like, what? You get paid for that? Yeah. But I mean, it's really, really important. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's plenty of free stuff available, but there's people who can really help you kind of shorten that curve to improve your breathing time.
Yeah, powerful stuff. I love that we talked about breathing, right? Like free. This is what I want people to access, because a lot of the stuff, lifestyle stuff, we're either neglecting and or not doing the way the body intended. And we're suffering with some health issues. And wouldn't it be crazy if we correct all of them and then all of a sudden our body responds and we don't even need to take that magic supplement, right? That really expensive supplement or medication.
Does that happen?
You better believe it does. I know you know. You're practicing. You see it. Isn't
right.
that wild?
I would say the people who commit to it and do it totally notice the benefit. I already know some of those people right off the bat who are like, no, I'm not going to do that. Yeah. I'm like, okay, we're going to have a hard time.
Right.
So, and I'm like, it takes me sometimes some of those people to talk to them a couple times about to get them to commit to it. Mm-hmm. But once they do, they're like, man, I should have been doing that sooner.
Right.
You should have all been doing it sooner.
Right.
And I think the other thing that ties into that is, you know, sometimes people have they have their pulse ox, right? Mm-hmm. And they're like, my oxygen saturation's great. It's 99%. I don't know. Is that good? mean, what'd you learn in medical school? You learned 99%, right? But I don't think that's good.
Yeah.
Because if your red blood cells could be totally saturated, but it's not getting to the tissue. Mm-hmm. And for the person who's listening to the podcast or watching it, I mean, they're thinking, what do you mean? It's on the red blood cells. Doesn't it automatically get to the tissues? No, what's in your bloodstream doesn't necessarily get to the tissue. And so you not only need to bring in oxygen and saturate those red blood cells, but you also want to show that the red blood cells are giving up some of that oxygen to the tissues. So if your oxygen saturation is always at 99%, you may not be getting great exchange. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a huge concern. I mean, I see a lot of people who are chronically ill. They're like, everybody says I'm fine. My oxygen percentage is 99%. I'm like, well, that's probably why you're struggling.
Right.
Because you're not getting it to the tissues.
Right.
And from a thyroid perspective, you know, to tie that back, people are like, what's the big deal? When you're not getting oxygen to your tissues, your cells automatically start deactivating the thyroid hormone at the tissue level, at the cell level. They increase an enzyme called deiodinase 3 that starts saying, whoa, we got danger, slow down metabolism. And for people, they're always looking for that, like, well, how do I get my thyroid hormone to work better? Or do I need more, or do I need to switch it? You know what you might want to do? Is start working on reducing the danger response.
Yeah.
Start working on the breathing. That's better than any other medication you're going to get. None of the medications are going to work good. Doesn't matter if it's T4 or T3. If your cells are starving of oxygen, that's a danger signal. Both T4 and T3 are going to be deactivated.
Right.
You're going to have hypothyroid symptoms. Yeah. I mean, just the way it is.
Isn't that wild? Isn't it wild that an endocrinologist doesn't say, here, I'm going to give you this medication, but the caveat is you need to breathe with it. Right? Isn't it crazy that we don't even talk like that?
Well, I think I've beaten up the medical profession in the past, and I came from that world, right? And so I think for the vast majority of endocrinologists, they're not taught that breathing has anything to do with it, right? It's a gland that became dysfunctional. It just happens.
Body made a big mistake.
It's an extra organ, get rid of it, we can supply it. I mean, I think they're taught that. I don't think they're given much time to deal with a client to be able to say, hey, we gotta check your breathing, we gotta put it in. I don't think it really even comes across. So in the past, I would be like, man, don't they see what I see?
Right.
Don't they read what I read? And the answer is no. Mm-hmm. They're not taught that, they're not doing that, they're following guidelines, they're following the standard of care is. And so it's diagnose and prescribe. And so I get it, and there's a place for that, but that's where I think we as functional medicine practitioners need to be aware of, okay, you're safe, but now if you want to, we can fix this if you're wanting to put the time and work in.
Yeah.
And not everybody wants to put the time and work in, no. Right?
Yeah, but that is the paradigm we live in, right? Like, oh, I don't feel good, give me something, I'll take it and I'll be better. Right, that doesn't involve much work other than driving to the doctor, making an appointment, sitting down, going to the pharmacy and getting a prescription.
Right.
But that's not the work. The work is every single day correcting those stimuli that are telling your body, I'm not safe. Right. So we have a cell, and you did an awesome comparison for people because they are like people, right? Mm-hmm. Walking down the street, and then let's say the things we give it, the body, right? Whether it's through food or stress, is telling that cell the outside isn't safe. What are some of the things you mentioned, how it changes thyroid metabolism? What are some other things that happen in the cell? I know we talk a lot about mitochondria.
Mm-hmm. Inside the cell, you know, if you think about the cell, it's got two primary focus kind of operating mechanisms. One is low stress, plenty of energy. I'm going to make hormones. I'm going to make enzymes. I'm going to make cellular structures. I'm going to make things that are more like building blocks, right? Proteins, but the defense mechanisms are going to be turned off. Life's good. We don't need to worry about that, right? But when the cell senses danger, all of that kind of growth development stuff turns off. And now a cell is saying, hey, we've got to slow down the cell metabolism. We've got to ramp up cell defense. So a couple things start to happen. One is that a cell stiffens what we call the membrane, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you think about it, it's like of your house, it would be like, hey, I've got to fortify the house. I'm going to lock all the doors and windows. I'm not letting anybody in. Nobody's getting out. Kind of fortify the place. And cells do that too. And the problem with that is that when you when you stiffen the cell membrane, now you can't get things across the cell membrane. You can't get glucose across the cell membrane. So what happens? Now you have a person who's now becoming higher fasting blood sugar. Right. They're producing more insulin. Now they're being diagnosed with insulin resistance and prediabetes, and they become diabetic. And they, you know, somebody might say, "Wow, it's just because you eat too much and you don't exercise enough." Not true, right? Because everybody who's overweight knows somebody, or who has diabetes knows somebody that eats more than they do and exercises less than they do, right, and yet still doesn't have diabetes. So what? There must be something different going on. But if you have that cell stress or cell danger response, you're not going to transport glucose across the cell at the same ease or the at the same frequency. So now blood sugar builds up and you get insulin resistance. You say, well, why wouldn't the cell want more glucose? Wouldn't that help it make more energy for defense? Well, if you have a threat inside the cell is trying not to bring more fuel in because that could fuel the threat, right? Mm-hmm. So if it's a bacteria or virus or whatever it is, the cell is like kind of reducing that. And besides, we don't need to make a whole bunch of energy, excessive amounts of energy, because if the more energy, the more proteins, the more hormones, the more enzymes they make, the threat could still use those things. So that becomes an issue. Two, we bring more less oxygen into the system when the cell membrane stiffens. So now we've got our danger mode kicked in. We don't make the proteins, we don't make the enzymes. And then we start kicking in the inflammatory mechanisms. And now the cells start producing these what we call inflammatory cytokines, which are essentially inflammatory molecules to be protective for themselves, but also as a signaling molecule to say, hey, cells and tissues over there, we got problems over here, defend yourself. It would be like me yelling over, you know, to the people in the other room, like, hey, somebody's breaking in, go protect yourself. And then the other thing the cell wants to do is it wants to produce more what we call oxidative stress, okay, more free radical formation. And that doesn't sound good, right? But that free, those free radicals are also part of the defense mechanisms to help find what it is and kill it, okay? And so part of the process of a cell that's in stress or in danger is to still make some energy with those mitochondria, because the mitochondria, those engines that kind of make all the energy, but they also make a lot of oxidative stress as a byproduct. So under stress conditions, by slowing down thyroid physiology in the cell, we don't make as much energy, but we're more efficient with the energy production and we're still making some oxidative stress. So by making some oxidative stress, I still have those free radicals to actually get in there and start finding to help with killing off the damage, but I'm not creating too much or excessive amounts of oxidative stress that can damage the cell. So we see a lot of the changes in people that we say, hey, I'm tired, I'm fatigued, I have blood sugar issues. And we look at those things in people who are chronically ill and say, oh, you know, it's fibromyalgia or whatever. We got to give you something to stimulate to make more energy. And those are probably the opposite things that we really need to do. Or, hey, you've got a mitochondrial problem. I need to get that mitochondrial kicked into gear. I don't know if you have a mitochondrial problem. I think you have a mitochondria that's being downregulated. That I agree with, but I don't know that we need to kick that into gear. And that could be really actually more problematic. And then I guess the last piece of that whole puzzle is by creating the cell stress response, by stiffening the membranes, we see an effect going on calling autophagy or mitophagy. And what that means is that the cell essentially starts kind of cleaning itself up and using the kind of the old or damaged pieces of the cell, and any debris in the cell is kind of a fuel to keep it going.
Yeah.
Okay. And so is that good or bad? I don't know. I think it's good. Mm-hmm. Right. And for somebody who's listening, like you think about like, what are they talking about? Well, think about a bunch of college kids, right? It's the end of the semester. They don't have any money left and they're starving, right? What do they start doing? They start looking through all the empty pizza boxes. Is there any food left? I'll eat that. What's left in the refrigerator? I'll eat that. And before you know it, they've cleaned up the whole apartment because they were starving, right? A cell that's in a danger response is going to start cleaning itself up. And in the process of cleaning itself up, it's going to find, oh, this is the thing. This is the organism that was creating the stress response. This is the toxin. We can break this down and get rid of it. And so just like those college kids, hey, what smells in here, right? Mm-hmm. Well, by cleaning up the process, they actually find, oh, that was a piece of moldy something that was rotting underneath the couch, but they get the thing cleaned up. And that's what cells do too. When they're in that danger mode, they can actually start addressing the threat or addressing the danger.
Mm-hmm. Really great analogy, because I remember that day in college. I remember that. So it's incredible to hear the way that you speak about it, because it highlights the very intelligence behind the body, right? Because what you described was literally, it sounded like a conscious being making conscious decisions on how to survive and optimize as mm-hmm. much as possible. And to think we have billions throughout our body happening mm-hmm. over and over, just this intelligence that is keeping us alive. And I think it's that intelligence that's neglected in many approaches for medicine, but the beautiful thing about functional is that we work with that, or naturopathic, we work with that intelligence. So to hear it like illustrated like that is really cool. So then it cleans it out, but if we don't remove the threat, it just keeps happening in a cycle, right?
Yeah, I mean, why would the body get healthy? How could it get healthy if the threat is constantly there, mm-hmm. right? And I think the bigger challenge is it's like everything else. Everybody needs a vacation, right? Every once in a while. I mean, we all love work, but then you need a vacation. And the cells are the same way. I mean, if they're constantly under excessive amounts of stress and you don't give them time to recover, they're gonna be in and out of that threat mode all the time. And people, and I think so many people operate in that mode all the time. They're just not aware of it. But at points in times, we have to find ways to just reduce the load, the stress load on our cells. Mm-hmm. When you go on vacation, you're doing it for like many times for your mental state. What you're doing that for many times is for your cells and tissues.
Yeah.
You go sit on that beach for 4 or 5 hours when you were like, I would never spend 4 or 5 hours sitting on a beach, right? And you give yourself time to decompress. You go somewhere and the cell service isn't good. You're not on your phone. You're not listening to the ting of, you know, TikTok or Instagram or any of those things. And so you sit by yourself and you're with your own thoughts. And I think those are opportunities where you really get a chance to heal at a cellular and tissue level. And some people just never take those opportunities, whether it's on a daily basis or even through the year, they're always in that constant load and their cells never get a chance to recover.
Yeah. So can we find time every single day to have recovery time, right? Maybe 30 minutes, maybe an hour, maybe 15 minutes to just be like, decompress, no phone, make sure my breathing's okay. Make sure I'm checking up with my body, mm-hmm. right? Like, ooh, I don't feel good. My stomach has been off all day. You know, just to acknowledge it, you know, listening, getting closer touch with your body. I mean, is it, do you tell people like take some time every single day?
I do. And I think the issue for most people is they're too busy, right? And we're all busy,
yeah.
right? And the person who gets the most done is often the person who's the busiest, right?
Right.
And the person who is way too busy is the person who really doesn't get much done.
Right.
So I always tell somebody, whether it's physical exercise or breathing, like, could you give me 30 seconds? Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I can give you 30 seconds. Okay, good. And commit to 30 seconds.
Start there.
Next time I talk to him, how'd it go? Did you do it every day for 30 seconds? Yeah, it was like, doesn't take much. Okay, good. So then give me another 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And then when I find that point where they are I don't have 5 minutes.
Right.
I'm out of, I mean, I can give you 5 minutes is like the max. Okay, good. So do you think you could give me like every 20 minutes, you could give me 30 seconds to a minute? Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. Let's commit to that.
Right.
And so I call that 20-minute fitness. So if you spend like set your phone and the timer goes off every 30 minutes and you spent 30 seconds to a minute working on your breathing exercise, doing a physical exercise, just go for a walk outside, do mm-hmm. something, before you know it,
yeah,
it's the end of the day and you've got, you know, 48 sessions of maybe 40 sessions of time that you had an opportunity to do it. And even if you missed half, that was, let's say it's 20 sessions. Now you did something for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And you didn't have time for,
right.
right? And now you did. And if I ask you tomorrow, you could probably give me another 5 or 10 seconds and add to it.
That's so powerful. So
I think that's the best way for most people. And then the other thing for them is to have a tool, right, to help them. Mm-hmm. It sounds crazy, like you need a tool to help you breathe. And I think yes, because even people who do like breathing exercises, or when you're used to doing breathing exercises, you know what to do, yeah. Right? And you're like, oh, I know what to do. It's like if you go to the gym, if you're a newbie at the gym, you go in and go, what are they doing here? But if you're new to breathing exercises, you're like, I don't even know if I'm doing it wrong.
Right.
And how am I supposed to do it? Like, do I really have to think about breathing? But there's tools like HeartMath. I mean, when I first got HeartMath, I thought it was the dumbest thing ever, because I'm like, I'm going to watch this thing help me breathe. I don't need this thing to help me breathe. Mm-hmm. But I could not get that thing into the right color mode. Right. And I was like, this thing's stupid. I told my friend who recommended it, I'm like, I hate that thing. It doesn't go into the right color. He goes, what are you doing when you're doing your breathing? I'm like, I don't know. I'm thinking about all the other things I need to do. He's like, Ryan, don't focus on all the other things you need to do. You need the device, mm-hmm. because you're not focused. You're trying to focus, pay attention, block the other things out of your mind. And then once I got it, I was like, wow, that could be powerful. Yeah. And as a person who's more athletic, you know, I like to do a lot of physical activity and run. Improving my breathing was huge just from a physical standpoint, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. let alone everyday activities for the person who doesn't breathe well. But I mean, as somebody who's trying to be athletic, huge. More oxygen into the system, more oxygen exchange is important. And I didn't realize that I just wasn't breathing well when I was running. I've just been breathing improperly for so long.
Big time.
That yeah. You don't realize. You're like, huh? And it took me, I mean, when I really started putting time into trying to breathe appropriately through my nose and make sure I was trying to keep my heart rate in an aerobic range when I was doing longer runs, I was like, man, this is hard. I've been running for 25 years. Mm-hmm. And I actually had to start over, because I was like, I'm in the black hole zone every time I'm running.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what was causing my insulin resistance, my Hashimoto's, my thyroid issues. I was like, holy cow, I'm eating well and doing all these other things, and I'm training and exercising, but I'm doing it what doesn't feel strenuous, but I wasn't breathing well. Mm-hmm. And that was a big reason, I think one of the big reasons why I developed Hashimoto's in my 40s.
Wow. Because of, I want to go back, because of breathing.
Well, yeah, because I think I've broken my nose probably 10 times.
Yeah.
And so I have one side that doesn't work well at all. And I'm kind of a wuss to go get it fixed, right? But, you know, you just default to mouth breathing when you don't get air through it. And it's been so long that I've had busted nose and not had great air exchange. It just becomes the norm. Mm-hmm. So when you go for a run, I don't think people would say, hey, if you can keep your, you know, mouth closed, or you can talk, that you're probably at the right pace.
Right.
That's not true. I mean, I could do that, run, you know, 8:30 pace for a long period of time and mm-hmm. have a conversation with somebody and feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. But when you're not breathing appropriately, your heart rate goes up, you start driving yourself out of aerobic respiration, you become what we call it, more anaerobic respiration. You're not going to burn fat efficiently in that range, and it creates more of a cell stress response. And I think it was really when I was pushing more triathlon based training, that's when I wound up finding out I had Hashimoto's. And it was probably decreased sleep, which, you know, I poo-pooed my whole life, like sleeping's for the weak, right?
For sure.
I only need like 4 hours a day. Training, right? So you have to get time in to train. You're in a pool. What's in the pool is not the cleanest environment to be in, right? Day after day. Poor recovery. Nutrition was good, but, you know, if you're not sleeping, you're not breathing well during that whole activity. Being a dad, coaching, work, all those things. But I really, at the end of the day, the breathing became extremely important, because especially if you're swimming, breathing's critically important. And I think that was one of the things as I was doing it that kind of was like, I always feel like I'm dying in the water. That's not my thing. But I think my poor nasal breathing overall, was probably one of the reasons I struggled with the swim portion. But I think it was all that stuff that really drove the process. Mm-hmm. But I think improper breathing, long runs, improper breathing, increasing your heart rate, being in that black hole zone was probably a huge factor in what drove it.
Powerful to think that. And that's mm-hmm. and we're just talking about thyroid. We're not talking about other diseases that can just sprout from poor breathing.
Yeah, I would run my blood work every year, and that year I got Hashimoto's, I've got insulin resistance, right? I'm working harder and I'm putting on a little, like, I guess what the ladies would call like a little muffin top, right? And you're like, oh, man, you know, what's going on here? But it was excessive stress response.
Yeah. Yeah. Your body was simply adapting to that.
Yeah. And somebody would look at it and go, but you know, you look fit, you're exercising, you're eating well. How could you get sick? Well, just like anybody else. If you're doing a lot of things, good stress is good and bad, right? But stress isn't in itself a bad thing all the time. Stress is good, that makes us stronger. Right. But you have to allow time for recovery. I just wasn't allowing time for recovery.
Right, right. Let me ask you a question. And wait, you mentioned really quick before we do, in the heart math, you mentioned the black zone. What, for people who don't know.
Oh, the black
know,
hole zone?
Yeah, the black hole zone. For people who don't know, what does that mean?
So when we, that's not necessarily a thing from heart math, mm-hmm. but the black hole zone is, there is your max capacity when you're doing something physically, right? And then there's a max aerobic zone, okay? Which is where you're using lots of oxygen, using your mitochondria, you're using burning fat. You can still use fats for energy. The black hole zone is the area where you're not at max capacity, but you're also not aerobic. So you're in an anaerobic period of time. And I think this happens to a lot of people, is that they're in that anaerobic portion. And what that means is I can really only burn glucose for energy, and I have to make fast energy. I don't have time to go through what we call these mitochondria. These are these engines inside your cells. And they can, you know, everybody learned this in seventh grade science class, right? The class where everybody's like, oh, Krebs cycle.
Right.
Oh, but you take this glucose molecule, you put it into this mitochondria, this machine, and it pops out 36 ATP, and ATP is your energy currency. When you're not air, but that requires air, oxygen.
Yeah, oxygen. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so if you're exercising at a pace where you can't get enough oxygen into the system and to those tissues, now the cells work anaerobically, which they can do, and they're very good at it, but it's not as efficient. And so one glucose molecule, and somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's 6 ATP, but then it's a net loss of 4,
yeah.
Right? And so when you're exercising anaerobically, your body will do it fast because it's quicker to make energy that way, but it's terrible for your health. It's a chronic stress response that your body's saying, hey, we got to break down muscle tissue. We got to figure out other ways to generate all this energy. And if you're always in that zone, it's not a good place to be. Mm-hmm. And so Phil Moffatone, I don't know if you've heard of Phil Moffatone, but he's a guy who came up with a formula. So the old formula for aerobic exercise used to be like 210 minus your age. And I think Phil's work, he calls it the MAF principle. It's 180. Roughly, it's 170 to 180 minus your age is kind of that aerobic training range.
Right.
So if you're in that kind of zone between 170 minus your age and 180 minus your age, that's probably your aerobic zone. So if you're doing a longer duration exercise, let's for purposes and say, hey, I'm going to go for a longer run. Let's say longer than 20 minutes, then you want to stay in that aerobic zone. Mm-hmm. So that way you're most efficient at making energy, you're doing it aerobically, and you're able to utilize what most people want to do when they're exercising is burn fat calories,
right?
If you can stay in that aerobic zone for extended periods of times, then you're going to do probably pretty much what you want to do. You're going to have less stress, less inflammation, and you're going to be able to burn fats more efficiently.
Yeah.
Now, if you're going to do powerlifting, or you're going to do something that's short and intense, like a HIIT technique, you want max capacity. So you're going to be in that phase where you want your body to make energy fast and quick.
Right. So that's what it means.
Yeah. Sorry.
Okay.
Long answer. Draw it out.
No. We understand much better. Just to see how important, and I love that we were talking about thyroid, but we tied in the breathing being mm-hmm. so important. And, you know, we didn't plan on this, but I love that we spoke about this because it's a pillar of health.
Mm-hmm.
Many of us are breathing poorly.
Mm-hmm.
Many of us don't even know it.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, many of us don't know how to breathe correctly. So when you tell people to breathe correctly, do you tell them to breathe through their diaphragm to bring it to their stomach, like belly breaths?
Yeah.
How do we bring awareness? Like, what do you say? Like, what is a proper breathing technique for you?
Typically drive people initially. I give them some simple exercise, but definitely belly breathing, hand on the belly, mm-hmm. breathe in, belly out. We'll have them work on box breathing, very simple exercises. Mm-hmm. And most, I would say the vast majority of people aren't necessarily people who are going to get super into breathing techniques. I don't see most of them becoming Wim Hofers,
right?
But I think Wim's got some techniques, but I think all of the stuff that he has come, those are concepts that are
ancient.
Right. Yeah. So I think I try and give them some recommendations that are going to be really simple to get them into it. Give them a device, something like heart math that mm-hmm. they can kind of work on and see that it's making the change. And then if they want to get a little bit more advanced with it, then try and send them in directions and even give them the books. There's a good book, The Oxygen Advantage of You.
No.
Andrew McGowan. He's kind of become the Buteyko guy. You're familiar with Buteyko breathing?
Yeah.
So I like the concepts of Buteyko breathing. Again, I think these are concepts that have been pulled from concepts that are
ancient,
right? But a book like his on the oxygen advantage, I think is pretty simple for most people to read. And for the person who's a little nervous about, is this getting too like woo-woo? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a good introduction to them.
But awesome.
I try and keep it super simple.
Awesome.
Because people are like, do I have to sit in the middle of the room and, you know, burn incense? No, just breathe.
Just work on your breathing. And
right.
And so for the viewers and listeners, what I do is I'll just like check in mm-hmm. throughout the day. You know, I know that I'm not breathing if my stomach muscles are so contracted, right? Like I feel like I have a tight band around my body. I go, whoa, like one, let me stretch. And I do some hanging exercises where I just hang for 30-second increments, and it kind of opens up my chest, opens up my stomach, and I go, okay. And then I just practice my belly breathing. I'll drive sometimes, and I'll be like, all right, is my belly fully sucked in, or is it like just relaxed, and am I breathing into that part of my body? Many times when I check in, I notice I'm breathing up at my chest, and there's short breaths, like sort of like gas breaths.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine, like, not only are you oxygenating poorly, but you're giving a stress response to your body, right? Like it's sending out stress signals. So the body's always thinking mm-hmm. you're stressed, even if you're not. And me, I meditate all the time, and I'm pretty zen. People are like, hey, Dr. G, you're zen. But does my body know that I'm zen?
Right.
You know, my mind does, but you know, and one major signal is the breathing. So anyway.
But I mean, I tell people the same thing. If you just put one hand on your belly, one hand on your chest, and just take some breaths.
Right.
What's moving?
Right.
Yeah.
A lot of the chest for people.
Yeah. If this is where it's all starting and your belly's not really breathing,
right,
you're doing more chest breathing and it's more stressful.
I love it. So Doc, where do people find you? I know you have your Instagram. It's amazing. You stay pretty up to date with it too.
Well, this week I have.
You have.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm on Instagram. I think it's Dr. Balcavage on mm-hmm. Instagram. See, I'm not an,
I know,
I'm
you're
not a social
yeah.
guy.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
I think it's Dr. Balcavage on Instagram. And then I have Rejuvigen is my website, and that's my YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
I have a podcast called Thyroid Answers Podcast,
yes.
and that comes out probably twice a month. Mm-hmm. I think we put that out. And then my Rejuvigen website. But I would say if I'm commenting or posting on things, most things are going on Instagram.
Yeah. And that's where we see it. And I love that you write it out. And you draw pictures and you write like concepts and terms. That's really important for a visual guy like me. Or, I mean, I wish I had more of that in school versus just like just talking about concepts. I need whiteboards. I need drawings. I need to, you know, and that's really cool that you do that.
Well, I think for me it's helpful.
Yeah.
Right. Because I'm not the smartest tool in the shed either. So for me, if I kind of write out concepts, and I do that all the time, is I read something, even when I'm talking, read a paper, I read it. I highlight it, I outline it, and I write it out, like, okay, make sure I understand the concepts and then try and tie those concepts together. So it's good that somebody says, hey, it's helpful.
Right.
It's helpful for me.
No. Yeah, I hear you. I think you sell yourself short, though. You are a very sharp tool on the shed.
We'll see.
Anyway, Doc, thank you for coming on the show. Love to have you back when you're back out in California. And everyone viewing or listening, you know where to find him. Check out his videos. And certainly, if you're suffering with anything thyroid, go online, look at his work, and then reach out, because I mean, I know you've helped so many people. We always talk about some things about thyroid, and you know, you got always up to date papers, so I love that. And like I said, pleasure to have you.
Well, thanks for having me on.